teams dotted the hillsides where once there were hickory and chestnuts.
Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Hey everybody, it's Thursday night again, and you are listening to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. Hey Karen, how are you?
Hi, I'm sorry I was muted because I was coughing. I knew I was trying to get it out so that I could turn my mic back on and talk to you. I didn't quite get it, so, oh well.
That's all right, that's all right. I mean,
I was feeling hypnotized by that music.
Whew. That music was like, I was thinking that aliens were going to come out of the computer and just take me away and do all sorts of anal probes and stuff. So,
Strange Zero by Ikebana.
Ikebana.
Ikebana, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. He's a Japanese guy, but sounds kind of like that. So, all right, here's what we got tonight. Tonight we're going to be doing something a little bit different. We've done it before. It's going to be a paranormal roundtable. And, you know, we got, you know, various news stories that we can talk about tonight. And joining us is our science editor and paranormal researcher, J.D. Harrison. Hi, J.D., how are you?
I'm real good. Rick, how are you guys?
Hey, J.D.
Hey, Karen.
Pretty good. And joining us from the great state of Tennessee is paranormal researcher and investigator Teresa West. Good evening,
Hi,
Teresa.
Hi, guys. Great to be here.
Hello.
Hi-ho.
So, all right.
And?
Oh, and, I'm sorry. And? Chad Wilson. Tonight joining us too is our publisher and all around interesting guy. I just recently found out what his real name is. And he'll be joining us as well. Chad Wilson. Hey, Chad.
Hey, how you doing?
And
Karen Frazier?
No, is it Cheryl?
Wow, I see how it is,
yeah,
Rick.
Cheryl. No,
thanks, Rick.
I thought you were going to be like moderating, so I was going to, you know, say, hey, and tonight moderating is...
Oh, I thought you were moderating, Rick.
Huh?
Oh, I thought you were the one who was moderating.
We are so on the ball.
No, oh, totally on the ball tonight. So, Paranormal Roundtable. We better get started before people start leaving in droves.
Well, who is Cheryl Knight?
Cheryl Knight is the editor of ParanormalUnderground.net. My boss, and I'm probably
nobody.
Going to be fired after tonight.
I'm nobody. Don't worry about me.
Don't worry. She's putting on her toupee as you speak.
Her toupee?
So she can be like Donald Trump.
Oh, okay.
All righty. So, you know what? If we don't have a moderator, I will move us through the questions since I'm used to that.
I was just joking.
Oh, are you doing it?
Yeah. I was just...
Oh, my God.
I was giving Rick a hard time because he forgot about me.
Nah, I'm really sorry about
She's
that.
She's been saving her voice so she can moderate.
Yeah.
Okay. So with this Paranormal Roundtable, we're going to be talking about the four main areas of paranormal research and investigation. Of course, ghosts and hauntings, as well as cryptids and monsters and UFOs. Also, Karen, there was something you threw in there, too, about... psychic abilities and
paranormal phenomena? There were two things. One I want to talk about is the hum, and the other is canine telepathy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes I think that my dog can read my mind. Like, she knows when I'm going to get up and use the bathroom and then steal all my food.
See, there you go.
All right. So then,
turn it over to the moderator.
Turning it over to the moderator, Miss Cheryl Knight.
Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome. I'm sorry. I'm not on the ball tonight. I guess I wasn't as prepared as I thought I should be.
No, we'll have some fun here. So we did this once before. When was it? Towards the beginning of the year, I think. And we had a really good time. So I think we have a lot of good topics tonight to discuss. So I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
So... basically, what we did is each of us contributed some topic areas in those four segments that Rick just introduced: ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, and paranormal phenomena. And so, so we'll just basically have a discussion about a lot of cool things tonight, and we can pretty much just, you know, go maybe in a, like, almost a round table fashion, but then just, you know, we'll have discussion, of course.
So are we like actually reading the news article or before we, you know, launch into it or what?
Do you want to?
Yeah, we can do that. Is that okay with you guys?
We should have discussed this. We've been on the line together for a half an hour
and didn't do anything
before the show. And now all of a sudden we're like, hey, how are we going to do this?
well, we were talking about Mississippi. What was that again, J.D.?
The crud.
Mississippi crud.
Gotcha. So everybody...
Mississippi crud tonight.
Yep. So if you're ever down in Mississippi, watch out for this stuff.
Yeah. Well, some of us just have some general topic discussions, but if you know, if you have a news item and you want to, you know, give the link and maybe give an intro to the news item, that would be cool.
Okay.
So okay, well, let's just get into it. We'll start off with the topic of ghosts, one of our favorite topics around here, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, Rick, you had a cool story that you wanted to talk about, so why don't we start with you, and you tell us about your ghostly story that you had found.
Okay, all right. I got this from ghosttheory.com, which is a great website. The guy he's kind of an open-minded, he's very much a skeptic, but he's also very open-minded. His name's Javier Ortega. He's a pretty cool cat. And recently he put out this story, and I'm going to agree with him. I don't know about you guys, but I've always been kind of leery of any place that says it's a business, you know, like a hotel or a bed and breakfast where it's like, oh, hey, our place is haunted. Because, you know, obviously nowadays the paranormal is very faddish and people make money on this stuff. But here's a story. It's from Salisbury, I want to say Massachusetts, and it reads...
It's Salisbury, Connecticut.
Oh, you're right. Thank you. Thank you. Reads, by day, the house at 1031 Highland Avenue will be an art gallery. By night and by reservation, the house will offer tours into the unknown. Now, I hope that that's not the bizarre sexual habits of the people who live there. The anecdotal evidence just became too much for David Harris to ignore. I'm a landlord to a paranormal house. Maybe. He told himself after hearing a series of tenants over the past 18 years speak of weird happenings at his rental property near Rowan Regional Medical Center. One night, a renter came home late from work when the rest of the house was sleeping, and he met an older woman at the bottom of the stairs who he assumed was a house guest. So I guess basically this thing has always been a bed and breakfast. Other tenants also reported seeing the apparition of an older lady, strange whispers at night about fire, the appearance of black clouds in a hallway, and children running up and down the narrow stairs. Whew. Okay. That I think that pretty much runs the whole gamut of, like, ghostly activity in a house, right? Harrison recently spoke to a young pizza delivery man who reminded Harrison he once lived in the rental house as a youngster. He told Harrison that after he left the Highland Avenue address, he was constantly followed by black smoke. Yeah, I'm sure that's not what it was.
Blue smoke coming out of the camera.
Yeah.
He needs to lay off the beans and all will be well.
Well, he is a pizza delivery man, so
there you go.
It goes on reading, causing him considerable distress and prompting his parents to seek out a priest for an exorcism of sorts. See, they're once again being filtered through somebody's belief system. What bothered, or should we say intrigued, Harrison about all the stories that was none of the tenants knew each other, yet they all describe similar phenomenon. Something in this house, Harrison says. He was even persuaded after asking James Milby, Jennifer Mays, and Danny Little of Carolina Association Paranormal Studies to conduct their own investigation. So, here we have a guy who has decided to turn his allegedly haunted home into a money-making scheme. Kind of like to get to know what everybody's opinion is about this. And JD, we'll start with you. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm on the same line as you. I think a lot of things, especially now since paranormal is so popular.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are looking for verification to say whatever verification they can get to claim their property is haunted, and then sure. They charge people to come and experience that. I mean, seriously?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. I've noticed this on some ghost shows. I won't mm-hmm. mention names, but at the end of a reveal, it's like...
I got a little something in my throat.
Yeah.
It's funny, haunted? But I could make that out, Karen.
You know, I mean, you've got people sitting there anticipating, and you can see the look in their eyes. Is it haunted? That's all I want to know. Is it haunted? And then if you go back a couple months later and you look and you say, okay, I'm with this group and I would like to investigate. All right, it's $245 a night per person, and except weekends, and it's $300, and, you know, that type of thing. And it's like, come on. I mean, now there are some places that are haunted. I mean, there's been documented paranormal activity recorded at these places for hundreds of years, even before, you know, the popularity of it. But I think
the Stanley Hotel being one of those, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there's something going on there. But seriously, it's like, I don't know. I just think a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon and, you know, saying that and I'm making a buck. It's my opinion.
Exactly. Karen?
So I actually disagree with you, JD. Okay. A fool and his money are soon parted. And if people want to spend their money and their disposable income that way, I've got no problem with it. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. I probably should have somebody investigate it. What's going on in those in most of these places isn't actual research anyway. It's people out seeking thrills. It's no different than going to Disneyland and riding, some of those thrill rides, things like that. If this is how people want to have fun and somebody's willing to open their house up to that and let the thrill seekers do it, that's good. That'll keep them out of the legitimate haunted places so real researchers can go and do their research. That's kind of how I feel today.
Yeah, I think that a sucker is born every minute.
And yeah, there comes, you go, that too.
Yeah, and when it comes to the paranormal, there are, you know, 1.5 billion suckers out there. So let us go to the Southern Belle, Teresa West. Teresa, what do you think?
I could open my house up.
Okay.
To make some money, go for it.
Yeah, there you go.
We've been experiencing things in my house for probably the last, let's see, how old am I now? Since I was 21 years old, would walk through a white mist to see apparitions here. The people that are jumping on the bandwagon are crap.
Yeah.
But if there's something there, you know, the Crescent Hotel, Wade went and did a bike rally in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And I was like, go to the Crescent Hotel. I want to go. I want to stay in the Crescent. I want to stay in room 419.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the bandwagon. You guys know what my first experience was. So
it was paranormal tourism. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was. But Chad and Cheryl were there, too.
Hey, no, I have no problem with paranormal tourism, Teresa. I think that it's great.
I don't have a problem with it. If I want to go, I'm going to go.
I don't know. To me, ghost tours are just—they're so lame. I mean, yeah, it's so easy to lie about.
But you know? But if that's going to satisfy the people who watch it on TV and decide they want to be like the people they see on TV, and paranormal tourism is going to satisfy them. Oh my God, that's great for the rest of us.
I don't know that what we did was paranormal tourism because it wasn't It wasn't a ghost tour. We were just cut loose to do our own investigations, and that was
okay.
Yeah, we paid for it. We rented it out. Paranormal Underground did with.
We rented the joint out, and I would live there if I could.
So there was how many?
For it, it's paranormal tourism, or when you pay for it, it's paranormal prostitute. No,
kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree. If it's good for the rest of us. If you look at the paranormal field, I mean, the whole idea of this is getting it into a credible science and trying to have it taken seriously. And the more these things crop up, the more people jump on board. You know, they're not doing anything credible, so to speak. It's
No, it doesn't matter though, because there are people doing credible stuff. So
yeah, that's true, but also it doesn't lend credibility to the field either.
Right.
Especially when in a lot of cases it's so blatant. And
The fad's gonna be over soon anyway. And then it'd be the people who were really interested all along.
Great. Back to normal, that's right.
I have to say for myself, I actually like going on paranormal tours. I don't mind paying for it. And we've gone on several around here at the Queen Mary, at the Whaley House down in San Diego. And then, of course, Teresa mentioned we rented out Waverly Hills for the night for our group of about 15. And, I learned a lot of history in all cases, as well as not only paranormal, but just the history of the place and the location in general, which I really enjoyed. But I personally have no problem with this, and I think if people want to spend their money on this, you know, they can spend it on this. So I think it's great.
Well, you know, like we were talking before, you know, we got on the air about this, and I'm sorry, Chad, and then we'll go to Chad right away. But you know, here in Chicago, there's probably maybe a couple dozen ghost tours that you see running around the city, and some of them are actually pretty good, and I know a couple people who actually do them. But it's kind of we have Al Capone slept here syndrome kind of thing going on. You know, anywhere where there's any kind of a haunting here in Chicago, it's usually because, you know, Al Capone had some dude whacked. It's kind of, you know, like, hey, George Washington slept here. We got it with mobsters. You know, we're a city built on blood and bullets. So that's what I think.
Yeah, but Chicago's cool.
Chicago's awesome.
Wouldn't change it for the world.
I've only been there once, but I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. It's actually my favorite city. I love Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Well, you haven't been to Louisville, Tennessee yet either.
I think Chicago's still my favorite.
Chadley, okay. What are your thoughts?
My favorite is Guntown, Mississippi.
Okay.
Guntown, Mississippi?
Guntown.
Guntown. Oh, well, hey, I'm there. Okay. You know me, I like me some guns.
Well, I actually divide the paranormal community into two separate groups. You know, you have your serious investigators, and I think you have your thrill seekers.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I guess it could actually help the local economy because it pumps money into it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good way of looking at it.
Somebody in our chat said that it basically helps keep these places, you know, they renovate with the money. It helps keep them open. But then you also got to think of the ethical questions of, you know, if you know somebody is stuck here, is it not our obligation to try to help them move on?
Chad!
Mm-hmm. Or maybe you know how I feel about reason.
That. Yeah. I never think it's our ethical obligation to help somebody move
maybe
on.
Maybe they're so caught up in their emotions that they don't know that
you have just sinned.
They will be here until they're here. And then when they're ready to go, they'll go.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, yeah, when they're ready, they're ready.
I'm a prime directive kind of gal. Oh, that's right. Random Star Trek reference.
But no, that's okay.
Mention to them, well, you know, do you know why you're still here? I mean, sometimes, you know, I've heard that they don't realize that they've moved on, you know, that they're passed over.
Here's the thing is, okay, say that you're someplace haunted, Chad, and you're dead, and you don't yet realize you move on. When you have a bunch of idiots coming through saying, what is your name? Why are you here? Can you give us a sign? At that point, don't you start to realize that maybe you're dead?
That negative lights turned off, and you're like, why are these fools running around in the dark?
Well, now, you know, and then you got places like the Villisca Axe Murder House, which offers tours
Chad's been a bit. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Chad's been there.
Okay, that's cool and everything, but that is probably one of the saddest haunted places in the world. There are like 6 kids who were murdered. Yep. Of what, was it 4 or 6 kids? I don't remember.
It was six.
6 kids. Eight people totally, you know, in total, 6 kids brutally murdered by somebody who was never caught. I mean, when does it become actual curiosity, and when does it turn into voyeurism?
Right, yeah, exploitation. Well,
you can feel sadness when you go there. You can because he was telling you, the guy that owns the place was saying, well, you know, you can hear the train passing by, you know, 2 miles away, and that's what you could hear that night that happened.
Right.
So you're sitting there in the dark, and there's no power, and, you know, so you can hear everything, and you can hear this train off in the distance, you know, and it just kind of makes you, you know, that much more sadder.
Yeah.
It kind of brings the reality home.
Yeah. All right, well, I think we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we're going to still be talking. We have our paranormal roundtable, and we're still going to be in the subject of ghosts. And you're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Stick around. Come on back. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Hi, everybody. This is Lee Douglas. I want to all of you 50s and 60s music lovers to listen to Old Time Rock and Roll, the largest oldies podcast in the world today, with a 110,000 song playlist. Our shows are always available 24/7. Go to www.oldtimernr.com. We have 2 new shows each week, and we take requests and dedication just like the old days. That's oldtimernr.com. Come on over and join the fun.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.org.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio. We just got done talking about ghosts and how people feel about haunted tourism, basically. So that was definitely an interesting discussion, and some people in our chat room got in on it, which was pretty cool. But, you know, some people like it, some people don't. It just, you know, basically there's a divide there. So
I have to clarify. I didn't say I liked it. I said if people are going to do it,
I like it. I mean, I like to do it myself. I like to go.
Oh, that's right. You like it.
So that was me. Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, you hate that. Isn't that like your least favorite phrase, Teresa?
It is what it is.
It is.
It is what it is, man.
It is what
it is.
Okay, well.
It's one of those controversial things.
Yeah.
It is what we make it.
Yeah.
She just added like a little existential twist to it.
Are you sure you didn't read The Secret, Teresa?
All right. Well, let's move on to another category right now. We're going to switch it up and move to UFOs. And Chad has just finished a new book by Nick Redfern. And I know we spent the other night, you know, talking for hours about Men in Black. So, Chad, why don't you tell us what you want to talk about?
Well, it's a very interesting book. It just goes into details about the different experiences people have had, and it lumps them into categories like hallucinations, government officials, aliens, interdimensional beings, even fairy folk. And I just thought it was very interesting. I mean, it didn't actually pick one or the other, you know, as the theory that it went with. So it just put all that out there, and I guess it just leaves it up to the reader to decide. You know, and to me personally, I think that they I've been reading some books by Philip and Brogmu, where he talks about these beings called the jinn, which are from Arabic folklore, and it's from the Quran and stuff like that, where they actually talk about the jinn. And I think a lot of Men in Black, aliens, even some ghost, you know, encounters and cryptids are actually could be these jinn creatures, which are basically banished to another dimension. Yeah, basically, God created angels, the jinn, which were formed from smokeless fire, and humans, and the angels, you know, he told the angels bow down before the humans, and they did, because I guess they were above them. And then he also told the jinn to do that, and their leader, whose name was Shaitan, basically refused to, so as punishment, God banished him and his followers to another dimension. So, yeah, and I think the Men in Black, you know, because of the way they act, you know, it could be like almost like just trying to basically keep people from finding out who they are. So they act like all these different entities and what have you. And so it kind of causes confusion. Because, I mean, the ultimate goal of these evil jinn, there are good ones, but the ultimate goal of the evil jinn is basically to basically take over the earth and, you know, kick the humans out.
So I'll start, I guess. So I actually just typed in the window what I think it is. I think I've always felt that the Men in Black are a collective hallucination based on cultural expectations. So I think that as stories start to filter down, and as a society here in the United States, especially, we love our conspiracy theories.
Oh, totally.
And I think that the Men in Black that people see in their experience are something that whether it's a hallucination or it's actually a created form, thought form that then comes into their lives because they expect it, I believe it's a cultural thing based on expectation.
Well, I've also heard the theory put forth that they are what's called a tulpa, which is basically a manifestation of, like, I guess, negative thoughts almost.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
You know, whenever I see, you know, or you see anything concerning the Men in Black, it's, you know, you talk about a cultural thing, Karen, and the Men in Black goes back not just, you know, to the dawn of the of the UFO conspiracy theories and everything. I mean, it goes back centuries. You know, Gilles de Retz, who was a French serial killer, I think back in the 15th or 16th century, he claimed to have got some kind of special abilities or was worshiping a man in black, and this man in black told him to go out and kill a bunch of kids. And then you got Elizabeth Bathory, who, you know, everybody knows her as the Blood Countess back in the 1600s. And she came across a man in black in the woods as well. So it's pretty much really like a cultural thing. Are they demons? I don't know. I think that that's something that's filtered through your belief system. But a conspiracy? I don't know. That's
a lot I guess of people on a
paycheck, man, you know.
I still think it could be just a representation of darkness. I mean, black is considered a color that's evil and dark and mm-hmm. frightening. And, of course, our cultural anthropologist could speak to this more than me.
Yes.
But I do believe it's a manifestation of the dark side, I guess, of what people, the things that we fear about ourselves. So, JD, what do you think?
Really not sure what I think. I don't think, as an anthropologist, about collective hallucination. Although every culture experiences cultural expectation, that falls under a different category. You expect certain things within your culture to not just exist, but function in a certain way. But as far as collective hallucinations...
That might not be a good way to put it.
Well, that's okay.
Manifestation.
I just find that hard to believe as far as that, but maybe interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Cultural interpretation.
There you go.
I think you hit the nail on the head, JD.
Maybe these people are actually there, they're appearing, and they're being interpreted as such, mm-hmm. because that's what the culture is expecting them to be. Okay, we got a UFO sighting, blah, blah, blah. Where's the men in black?
Right.
Maybe there are men in black. But, you know, it could be something as simple as government agency. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it, but it could be.
You're going with a simple explanation.
Yeah, when I was in the military, we would have to respond to the flight line at certain times. And I know one night... we got called out at 3 in the morning, didn't know why, there wasn't an emergency. We went out, waited. There was this big hangar there, and all of a sudden the doors opened, and out onto the flight line, and my heart went in my throat, rolled the SR-71 Blackbird.
What's that?
Everybody nice. Knows what that is now. It was a spy plane.
That's
very
the plane
famous.
That is no more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this thing was just awesome. And, of course, it took off, but, you know, standing over in the corner were two men in black suits. And
you know what? I own a black suit.
And, you know, why were they there on the base? Now, they had to be a government agent. They had to be some form of government agency. It had to be CIA or somebody associated with that, you know. Now, that could be what's happening. Could be that simple. But... Mm-hmm. Because culturally, since it was brought up, we expect things to be a certain way. And then it's sort of like the urban legend, you know, well, they're associated with this and this and this and this. And it builds and it builds and it builds. And now when something like that happens, people look for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be confirmation bias because there's always going to be some dude in a black suit.
Exactly.
Here's why I think that there is something to men in black, and I do believe that maybe sometimes they're just regular people wearing black suits and sunglasses mm-hmm. and driving a black car and hat and whatnot,
right.
But
yeah.
What
in
about
a black
helicopter. Exactly, the seemingly legitimate points from or stories from seemingly credible people where these men in black look like they're in some type of costume where they're have strange makeup, almost makeup on, or some type mm-hmm. of like mask, or their skin is kind of off, or you know, just it's. I've heard a lot of stories that seem to lend credibility to men in black not being human. Hmm. Let's just say. Yeah. So I don't know, Teresa. What do you think about men in black?
Teresa.
Teresa.
Uh-oh.
Sorry, I was muted. My husband
She's talking away.
Actually, I was smoking a cigarette, so...
Cigarette. Oh, Teresa. Okay, please proceed.
My husband only wears black suits with black ties, so... But he's not a G-man. He actually has the same thoughts about the black helicopters that all of us do, so... if he goes out, he's in a black suit with a black... Or a white shirt and a black tie and sunglasses.
Interesting.
But that's only to funerals and...
Right.
But, yeah. You know, it's, I have never personally myself come upon a man in black except for the movies. So
Yeah.
You know, I think that the bias is, you know, black suits come in season just like gray suits do. So
yeah.
You see one on the street, they're not necessarily somebody working a conspiracy theory. They may just be going to their mother's funeral.
That's true. Well, you know, one of the reasons that I come up with the cultural expectations theory is because I used to work in an office that was right across from Keyport, which is a naval acoustical center in on the Kitsap Peninsula in Washington State. And there would be black helicopters that would come in and hover over the base. And when I would see one of those things, I would have this inexplicable anxiety related with it. And the only thing I could come up with is that it's the cultural thing because they're freaking black helicopters, you know?
Yeah.
See, I live less than 2 miles away from what used to be a Strategic Air Command Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. My father worked on the Air Force Base. We went to the pool at the Air Force Base. You know, so all this stuff to me was kind of... I grew up with it. So, you know, I see people in black and I wonder where they're going. And there are continuously black helicopters circling over my house.
So somebody in the chat room, Crystal in the chat room, actually says it could be both government as well as other world beings. And, you know, that's true. We're talking about it as if it's one thing or the other. And I think that we tend to veer towards absolutism sometimes in our discussions of paranormal topics. And I don't think that it's mutually exclusive. It could be both. She's right. Good point, Crystal.
Well, it actually mentions that in the book, you know, Nick Redfern's book, The Real Men in Black, which is... Mm-hmm. I would recommend it for anybody who's interested in the subject. It kind of brings everything together, all the different theories and stuff. So,
Well, who's interested in cryptids? Who wants to talk a little bit about cryptids?
I'm down with that.
I do. Okay. Well, let's talk about cryptids. And JD has a good question about Bigfoot. So, JD, why don't you tell us about your question or discussion point, rather?
Lose JD.
Wow, I'm batting a thousand here.
Are you smoking a cigarette on mute?
Okay, well, we'll just move on to Karen's question about the hum.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Can I hear you now?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Are
I was
smoking
muted.
A cigarette?
No,
see,
I was
See, I'm
coughing.
Not the only one.
Oh, God, cigarettes. God, stop.
No, I was coughing. It's that crud thing, but anyway, I muted and I forgot I was setting her hello.
Amateurs, they're all amateurs, Rick. I tell you,
I know, right?
They're not okay, we're not like gonna we're not gonna get through very many
awesome
questions this way.
JD, let's go with your Bigfoot question.
All right. Well, you know, Bigfoot has been reported, Sasquatch, Yeti, Skunk Ape, whatever name you want to give it. Hundreds of years, it appears in Native legends and that type of thing. One of the big things that people claim evidence of are castings of footprints that creatures supposedly left behind. One of my questions is, though, recently, there have been castings that have surfaced that show dermal ridges on them. And I was wondering how people can account for that.
Is it like fingerprints? That's what you mean by dermal ridges?
Dermal ridges are only two creatures that will have dermal ridges. Fingerprints and same thing on your feet. And that would be primates. That's all your monkeys and things. And humans. Mm-hmm. And other creatures don't have that. Now, these casts are showing up, and at last count, there were at least five. that were collected, and they were in different locations throughout different parts of the country, and they all exhibited dermal ridges. And in addition to that, they also exhibited scarring that had been healed, like the foot had been cut, and there was evidence of scars there and that type of thing. And I'm wondering what people think about that.
Well, what about the theory that these they're made from casts? I mean, what are those called? When
you mean like special effects feet?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They'd have to be really good to do that. And what's interesting is in human feet, if anybody's barefoot, look at the bottom of your foot. Your dermal ridges run side to side. Mm-hmm. But in primates, they run up and down the foot. And all the dermal ridges on these castings have run up and down. Now, that doesn't prove they weren't faked. Not at all.
Right.
But in order to fake that, somebody would have to be very, very good indeed.
So specialized and, knowledge is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Extremely specialized. Mm-hmm. And is it possible? Yes, anything's possible. Mm-hmm. But in science, there's no absolute, ever.
So
there's no absolute. We go by statistics and probability, and probability of that happening, somebody being able to reproduce such fine dermal ridges with even scarring and evidence of healed scars and things like that is pretty phenomenal. I mean, that person would be filthy rich if they were in special effects. But
so why haven't we ever? You. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chad.
I mean, it just seems like the only thing they ever find, though, is footprints and blurry photos. I mean,
yeah, that was my question.
Well, that's not true. There's also been hair samples that have been recovered.
Okay. Didn't they get one on the Josh Gates show?
They did. They did.
Yeah. So there's been other people who have found hair samples?
Bhutan and Tibet, and there have been other ones. Dr. Jeff Meldrum has a database of it. He is a anthropologist who actually has a funded project on, he calls it the Great American Ape, on looking for this creature. He's a professor of anthropology and physical anthropology at the University of Idaho.
So, and, why no bodies? Why haven't any bodies been discovered then?
What's that?
Why haven't any bodies of Bigfoot been discovered?
There's a lot of arguments about that, where in that type of woods, and I can tell you as an archaeologist, when you have a humid environment like where a lot of these creatures are reported, it seems like the humidity is higher, even in the south with the swamp ape, and the Pacific Northwest, which is a rainforest. Organic material does not last very long at all. It's very difficult to preserve. It deteriorates quickly.
Mm-hmm.
How often have you hiked through the woods and found a skeleton of a deer or a bear? Or
a couple times.
Anything? Well, yeah, I have too, especially deer. But usually... Yeah. It was at a dump site where a hunter had killed it and took what they wanted and left it. But
Speaking of the skunk ape, Rick had something on that.
Well, yeah, but I also wanted to ask JD this too. Now, JD, we know that Neanderthal man did in fact bury their dead, correct?
Yes, they did.
Okay, now if this is some kind of a throwback to the Neanderthal. Is it a possibility that the reason nobody's ever found a body or bones or anything like that is, A, they either don't know what they're looking for, or B, they bury their own dead?
It is possible. It's very possible. We don't know anything. To get back to answer that better, to get back to the hair samples, when they were tested for DNA, they came back with human characteristics, but they were primate.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were run into the database of known animal species, they couldn't get a match.
Right.
And they had to come up with, it was unknown primate is what it was. Now, all of your great apes are extremely intelligent. But, you know, even the mountain gorilla, which is the largest, and the chimpanzee, which is the closest in DNA to human beings, do not bury their dead. This would have to be something on the branch of human evolution, not primate evolution. Now, is it? We don't know. I don't know if it's real. I'm not saying that it's real by saying this. I'm saying that the evidence is compelling. It deserves scientific investigation. And, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions, of course, about that. But is there something out there? I don't know. But the evidence is awful compelling. When you find hair samples that do test that, and you find prints and casts with dermal ridges and that type of thing, something's going on. And we need to look at that a little bit closer, I think.
Cool, but Teresa?
Yeah, JD, I don't know if you brought this up or not, but were the dermal ridges on these casts that have been found lately that you've seen, were they closer to primate or ape?
They were closer to primate.
Closer to primate.
They were a type primate. Yeah, in fact, they were examined by a fingerprint expert who has done work for the FBI. And it totally blew him away. He couldn't identify the primate type. It was unidentifiable. But he was able to confirm they were dermal ridges. And he's the one that showed the scars with the healing and several other features that were associated with that. And it's pretty interesting.
What I wonder about is with the huge amounts of growth hormones that are in food, these days we find children growing up in their teen years in size 16 shoes.
Yeah, my 14-year-old has size 14 shoes.
I was going to ask you about that because, and that's a big footprint.
Yeah,
I was going to ask because, you know, this could be a teenager hoaxing a prank.
Well,
if he's got his size, if they have a size 14 to 15 shoe, they probably have a 6-foot stride to go with it.
But then he has some wonky dermal ridges, according to what JD's saying, right?
Well, hold on a second.
Apparently,
dermal ridges, you know.
They're primate. They're human rather than primates.
Right.
Okay.
Sorry, Rick.
No, I'm sorry. I keep talking over you. I apologize.
It's okay. I just wanted to know if anybody had seen the show Finding Bigfoot. I caught an episode of it Sunday night with my nephew, and the BFRO, the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, goes out, and they were in the Uwari Forest region in North Carolina, and it was actually pretty entertaining. But they go on to, they spew, this is what a squatch does. These are characteristics of a squatch. And these people were out camping in the remote regions of a North Carolina forest, and they think that nobody else is going to be out there with them. So one guy had his tent brushed across, and then he took a thermal image of something picking up a Snickers candy bar off a stump, and he was like,
I know what you're talking about.
And then this team went back in and had one of their big guys named Bobo, of all names, go in.
I'm not
and
stressed.
Exactly. Bobo is a fairly big man, and he went in under the black and white thermal and took a Snickers bar from the same stump, and it looked exactly the same. So
I would tell you, yes, my son has really big feet, and he would take a Snickers bar off a stump if he saw one. So
there you go. And it just wasn't such a stretch for me to believe that if somebody was camping out in this forest, that there couldn't be other people out there, too. So that was my Bigfoot stuff.
Maybe LeBron James just gets bored in the off season.
There you go. And he was in
There you go.
Well, I think Bigfoot is, for me, one of the cryptids that could be out there. But I just find it really difficult to believe that we never found or photographed a deceased Bigfoot. But
Well, except for that thing in the freezer.
Yeah, the costume, the big cooler. Costume.
Yeah, that was.
Oh my god, so that was the most awful thing.
Yeah. But, okay. So
my best Bigfoot stuff is to go on YouTube, and there's one group that does Bigfoot videos, and it's all one guy in a monkey suit.
Oh yeah, and he's flipping people off, and he's going like wheelies on a motorcycle. That's great.
Yeah, in every video, he turns around and flips the camera off, and that's my favorite Bigfoot stuff. But I'd like to see a real one.
Well, if anyone can find Sci-Fi Investigates on YouTube where they did a recreation of Bigfoot, boy, that'll have you laughing for a good 15, 20 minutes. So I highly recommend that episode. It was entertaining. Anyway, moving on, we have a question about, quote-unquote, the hum that has been going on, when, Karen, since the mid-70s, you said?
Since the 70s. I'll read the article because, well, most people are familiar with the hum, I think, or they've heard of it. The article will at least refresh your mind. And this is actually from the Telegraph from June 9th. So now, let's see. Where does it start? It says, Tiny Village is the latest victim of the hum. It is a mysterious sound on the very edge of perception that has driven thousands of people around the world to distraction. Now a tiny village, an English village, is the latest community to claim to be hit by the phenomenon known as the hum. Residents of Woodland in County Durham complain that every night a noise permeates the air similar to the throb of a car engine. It is sometimes so strong that it even shakes the bed of one of the householders. But no matter how hard they look, the community cannot find the source of the problem, and at their wits' end, they have called in a council to investigate. So this has actually been going on. I'm now talking, not reading the story. It's been going on since the 1970s. The most famous occurrence happened in Bristol, and 1,000 people heard it, and they said that this constant drone caused nosebleeds, headaches, sleeplessness, and a host of other symptoms. So I'm really curious to know if you've heard of the hum and what you think it might be.
Yeah.
Who wants to start?
How close is this place to the shore, Bristol?
Bristol is on the shore, and I don't know where this other place was, because I did not know I would be asked a geography question.
Well, I know that.
But you brought JD.
Well, I've read something about this a while back, and I know the Navy had experimented, and well, when they say the Navy experimented with, you know, they're using it. They had installed some things near shores, different shores, for the detection of submarines, and it was ultrasonic type. Speakers where it would blast ultrasound waves through the water and be able to pick up location of Russian subs and things.
Yeah, this and, one is Woodland County is inland.
Okay.
It's 1,100 feet above sea level, a few miles north of Barnard Castle. Wikipedia, that's right.
There you go.
Well, the first time I heard of the hum was in the book The Celestine Prophecy, and that was about, 17, 18 years ago.
Right.
And James Redfield is the author of the book. But anyway, he talks about the hum, basically. And my memory is fuzzy about the book, but I think that it was a theory that it was some type of government, not control, but some type of government, project, I guess, if you will. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That's what the hum was. And only certain people could hear the hum.
See, but now that's interesting that you say that, Cheryl. All right. Okay. Only certain people can hear this thing. Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at this, I want to look at it from a paranormal perspective or a supernatural perspective. You know, what if this is something that, only certain people with some kind of, latent psychic ability can hear? And to get apart from that, could this also be maybe fault lines? You know, that's giving off some kind of
So you're saying something geo.
Yeah, something geophysical that only certain people are in tune to. That's one of those two things.
Because, animals can hear things that are like the geophysical things. That's why I believe they can sense earthquakes. That's what I believe is what behind geosensitivity is, that it gives off some noise that only certain people or things can hear. So that could be, Rick.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think with something like the hum, you got to look at all different levels, because whatever this thing is, I've actually heard of it driving people to the brink of suicide and even committing suicide because it's so annoying to them.
Yeah, something I don't know. I don't know. I wonder, it could be also, can you hear the ELF waves, the extra low frequency, whatever it is? Are those things that can be, you can hear, or are they outside of the range of human hearing? Do you know?
I think it's something that's outside the range of normal human hearing, but maybe there are just some people who are more in tune with it.
Hey, yeah, like Chad? Some people have high frequency hearing loss. Maybe some people have low frequency hearing. Yeah.
Chad has a theory that I think is interesting.
Okay.
What's the theory? I forgot.
Well, in the chat room, I see that Chad typed mind control.
Oh, yeah. I think it may be some form of mind control, or maybe they're trying to...
Ooh.
Maybe they're trying to use this, like, say, the government against the enemy soldiers, and it could cause depression or whatever.
Oh, like weaponized.
Yeah.
Ah.
I don't know. Well, I mean, it's just this is an idea.
In the book, Celestine Prophecy, the hum, I believe, was in Peru. So, anyway.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know. It's just it's a story that's always interested in me.
Do you guys remember the movie Phenomenon?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. ULF is not something you hear, you feel.
Okay. And yeah, because he had like the brain tumor, right?
Yeah. But he, you know, he sensed the earthquake.
Right.
And it wasn't because of something he heard. It was because of a feeling within himself. He felt the waves. He didn't hear the waves.
Right.
Okay.
So maybe that's part of the hum.
Has anybody
maybe what you're saying is that they're feeling it, but because they lack the sensory explanation for it.
Understanding.
So yeah, they interpret it as a hearing.
They interpret it as hearing a hum rather than feeling a hum.
That's an interesting theory.
So has anybody on this panel heard the hum?
I've never heard the hum.
I've never heard the hum either.
I haven't
either. No, but if it causes sleeplessness, that, you know, I'll blame it on that.
No, but I do tend to be a little bit on the geosensitive side, and
I'm going to go with Karen on that.
So,
mm-hmm.
Are you geosensitive too?
No, but I'm going to go with the geosensitive kind of thing. That's probably what it is. You know, there's maybe there is like a frequency that the Earth does, you know, well, hum at more or less, and you know, hey, you're just some people are able to pick it up better.
Yeah. Maybe it's the stars singing.
Could be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, should we move to the next question?
It is
one from Teresa, and it's about the different types of hauntings, specifically intelligent hauntings. So, Teresa, you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, what I want to know, of course, like I said, I just finished reading the first Ghost Hunters book, Ghost Hunting, by Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson, and a ghostwriter that writes science fiction, but... they talk about the three types of hauntings, the residual, the intelligent, and poltergeist activity. If there is an intelligent haunting, why doesn't a ghost have its own talk show?
How do you know I don't?
You know,
I could be a ghost talking to you right now. I was born in 1735.
They say the intelligent hauntings are able to communicate with humans. The ghosts, you know, and I'm like, well, okay, if we can talk to them, why don't everybody else has a talk show? Why don't they have talk shows?
Because they don't make... Okay, so here's my response to that. And this
That's
is based on the
question.
Fact that I have been just interviewing Lloyd Auerbach, so realize I have all of Lloyd Auerbach's theories in my head right now.
Good ones.
They're awesome. So what he would tell you is that ghosts don't have vocal cords. So the way that we're having a talk show right now, and we're on the radio, is that we're creating sound waves via our vocal cords. So a ghost is going to communicate differently. They're going to communicate telepathically. So if they have a talk show, then they're going to come into the brains of somebody, say like Robin Marie in our chat room, and they're going to broadcast to the psychics and the people who can perceive them telepathically as opposed to through a physical sound wave process.
So this is how Oprah's going to get back on the air.
Yeah, but you know what? I've always had kind of an issue. Now, of course, I understand that, you know, spirits don't have vocal cords or whatever. But EVPs. Now,
mm-hmm. when you're doing psychokinetic.
Okay, it's psychokinetic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I'm thinking about, you know, hey, I want a hot dog right now, can I imprint that onto a tape?
Why don't you try it? You know what? That's one of the experiments I want to do out in the field or even in my own home, is that I want to do some experiments with that because, yes, according to what they have found in psychical and parapsychological research, they actually have documented research using the scientific method that shows that you can psychokinetically imprint onto a recording medium.
Oh, I'm so going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I can buy that. I really can. But you know what? When I'm like, you know, when I'm at a location and I'm doing EVP and I'm asking really direct questions, and then I get back a really direct answer on EVP, or I get back a really direct answer with a disembodied voice, mm-hmm. and I don't think that that's coming from me. I think that that's coming from somewhere in the environment. How? I don't know.
Maybe that's why there's no experts. Yeah, maybe it's somebody standing next to you.
Yeah.
Who knows? Like a live person. Because if a ghost can do it psychokinetically, then so can a living human being.
Okay, I'm down with that.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I think.
Do you believe, Karen, that it can be both occasions that cause this, or just the one?
I have no idea.
Okay.
You know, that's just it, is that
yes.
Clearly we get things on tape. I mean, if you go to the paranormalunderground.net gallery and listen to EVPs, I'm, you know, like the top poster of the EVPs there. And it's because we get a lot of stuff. Something's happening. Could it be ghosts? Sure. Could it be me thinking or wishing or expecting? Sure. Could mm-hmm. it be something entirely different? Maybe.
Okay. Mm. Chad, what do you think?
Well, I think it's a two-way deal. I mean, they can try to communicate with us, but unless we stop and listen, we're not going to hear them. And people get so caught up in just trying to live life sometimes that they don't pay attention to what's going on around them. And something might happen, and I've heard about this in multiple conning cases, where something might happen, and they just basically brush it off as something that, you know, well, that was this or that or the other. It wasn't a ghost.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just believe that I actually believe the spirit world is always, you know, they're all around us. Some people can see them, some people can't.
I agree.
I
think so too.
Yeah. Hey JD, I'm curious to see what you think about intelligent hauntings.
Well, I don't know. We were talking about you guys were talking about the EVPs and being able to imprint things on it, your thoughts and that type of thing. I'd be interested to see the methodology that was done on that.
Go to the American or the Psychical Research Society, is I believe what it's called, and you should be able to look it up.
Okay, I'd like to look at that. You know, the only way I could think of getting true, and I've said this before, put an EVP recording device in a room, you'd have to seal the room. You'd have to seal it completely. Leave it on and just get the hell out of there. Leave it alone. Come mm-hmm. back the next day and then see if you picked anything up.
Do you suppose, I have access to one of those padded rooms in the juvie hall. I wonder if they would let me stick my recorder in there.
I don't know.
There's got to be ghosts in there.
You know.
I mean, just for what JD's saying, put it in a sealed room and.
Yeah.
But now, hang on a second. What if you're like me and you ascribe, believe in the notion that although that energy may be there, that it cannot manifest unless there is a human or humans there. See what I'm saying? I mean, if you just put something in a sealed room, you're not going to get anything because there's no, I've always believed that kind of like ghosts were parasitic in a way that they need our energy to manifest.
So you're saying it's like a tree falling by itself in the woods and nobody hears it?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but see, we get back into that empty loop, that argument, which is just, it just pervades a paranormal society right now. We're talking about all this, but there's really no empirical evidence for any of it.
Exactly.
We don't know.
Well, Lloyd Auerbach would disagree with you.
But it still happens.
There's stuff there since 1882. It's been scientifically studied, and people just ignore it.
It's been studied, but it exists.
I'll give you Lloyd's email, JD.
No, we interviewed him. I talked to Lloyd before. Yeah, I remember. And Lloyd's a good guy. I mean, I like Lloyd, but the... it's just, you know, you're looking for something, and what I'm talking about empirical evidence is we don't know what makes up a ghost.
Exactly.
We don't know what kind of energy it emits. We don't know what it is. How can you measure something if you don't know what it is? You don't know what you're measuring, regardless, and that's my point. So, you know, whether people are present or not, can they manifest? Who knows?
That was part of one of the things I was thinking about today.
You know,
the measurability and what are we measuring?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, it warrants scientific investigation. It's been around for thousands of years. People have been reporting this. There's something there. There's definitely something going on. But what is it, and how do we go about measuring it and doing it in a way that we can scientifically report it?
Okay,
that's the question.
Now, JD, I want to ask you this question. Do you think that it's because, and then I'm going to tell you what I think afterwards. Do you think that it's possible to use the scientific method in the strictest sense to study the, you know, the existence of ghosts? Do you think that's possible?
I think it's possible. I don't know about the existence. What you would have to do is create a methodology or establish a methodology that would allow you to test for the presence of paranormal phenomena.
Okay. I just always thought that it was like way too random and way too spontaneous to actually say, okay, I'm going to use a scientific method to study this. You can't.
Because it's not repeatable?
It's not repeatable. Yeah. You can't really take a ghost into a laboratory and say, okay, you know, do chimp act for me. You know,
okay, not repeatable. I've thought about this. For example, this is just an idea, okay? For example, this is where you would look for it. All right, you do this in a sealed room. You're taking environmental measurements. Let's just, to simplify it, let's say temperature, barometric pressure, and maybe static charge in the room, all right? Mm-hmm. And you're recording at the same time. Nobody else is in there. The room's sealed off. You record, you're monitoring it over a computer program. It's going. Okay. You go to look at your evidence, all right? At a certain time, you get a voice or what appears to be a voice, okay?
Okay.
At that same time, you get a spike in, say, static charge and a drop in pressure and temperature.
Okay.
All right. Then you get nothing else. All right. Mm-hmm. Go to your next investigation. You find similar conditions. You do the same thing. And say that the same things occur. You get the spike. You get the drop.
Okay.
All right. Now, does that mean that the EVP was caused by the spike and the drop? Or was the spike and the drop caused by the EVP? That's your next question.
Yeah.
Well, then you have to take all that. You see what I'm saying? And then you have to take your research further. And you go. But that's where you have to start.
Okay.
That's where you have to start. Can it be repeatable? It might be. Under certain conditions. If you can establish that. But someone has to start somewhere, and it might be a dead end, but no one will know because no one's done it yet.
Right.
And that's what we need to be doing.
Okay. All right. Well, with that being said, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. You are listening to a Paranormal Roundtable at Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
It's John here from Haunted Cornwall FM in the UK. We will be on Z-Talk now on a Sunday afternoon from 3 till 5 Eastern. We do talk all about the paranormal. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's paranormal. Audience are invited to get involved. If you've got questions, ask, because we've got a superb team that will be able to answer them. We don't sensationalise, we just tell the truth. However, if we find out there are fakes about, we will name and shame them. You've got to listen in to Haunted Cornwall FM from the UK on Z-Talk, 3 till 5 Eastern.
I know what you are. You drive too fast, you smell so good, and you dress fashionably well.
Say it out loud.
You're a metrosexual?
Why do I always get that? I'm a radio show host.
Kale, I want to be one of you.
And you can be. Join me on ztalkradio.com, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sunday nights. The show's called Perspective.
Hey, Do you sparkle?
Oh my God, don't even start. Hang on, Spider Monkey.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Competition has taken notice.
Oh my God.
Good luck keeping up with us.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
And we're back. Yay.
And back. Yay.
So welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We're here with our world-renowned panel of paranormal experts. Just kidding.
Oh, wait a second.
I am so not an expert. It's not even.
I am not an expert, not either, and they do not know me in Xi'an, China. Okay, so.
Do they know you in Chicago? That's more important. If they know you in Chicago, but.
I just have questions.
Yeah. Well, hey, that last question was a doozy, but yeah, that was.
Yeah, it was.
Interesting. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well, we're here
all day.
Yeah. We're here with Karen Frazier, Rick Hale, J.D. Harrison, Teresa West, Chad Wilson, and myself, Cheryl Knight. And we are talking about all sorts of cool paranormal phenomena. I think it's time to move on to UFOs again. And I actually have a question. And I had an idea. I was pondering something the other day after watching a Doctor Who episode that basically, and I'm really summarizing quickly here, but the show had an alien race living below their surface in caves, basically, and the aliens controlled everyone and everything that had happened throughout Earth's evolution, and the way they did that was that they could implant suggestions into our heads, and also they could make us forget that we saw them. So basically you'd see the alien in some way, you know, in the room or whatever, and then you turn away and you forget about them. But anyway, my question is that do you think that an extraterrestrial race in any way, shape, or form has ever influenced the human race, i.e. the Egyptian pyramid theory, etc.? And if they did, for what purpose? So, anyone want to chime in?
Yeah, so Karen. I think that there's actually a machine that can measure this. They have it at the Church of Scientology, and you just go in and...
Karen, do not get us sued.
Is Charlie Sheen a member of the Church of Scientology?
Winning. I'm just... But seriously, yes, I do believe that we have been influenced by... something that is not of this earth, mm-hmm. and whether you want to call that aliens or even our own consciousness that exists outside of our bodies and our conscious awareness,
okay,
or there's something in our universe, I believe, and I'm not trying to get all theological here because I think that I've made it fairly clear that I'm not a believer in a personal God. That being said, I do believe that there is an intelligence that underlies this universe that influences us, and therefore that's something that's outside of us, and it's something that's outside of what we experience in this earthly realm. So in that sense, yes, I do. And whether those are aliens or something else, I don't know.
Good point.
You know, first off, before I answer, I just want to go on the record and saying that Matt Smith sucks and Dave Tennant was where it was at with Doctor Who.
Tom Baker.
Okay. Oh, there you go, too. Okay, nerds. Now with that being said... No. All right.
I love Tom Dave Baker, I think, the most, and then David Tennant, but, yeah.
Okay, now, when I think of, you know, like, you know, the pyramid theory and all that, okay, yes, I do believe that we have been visited. I have no doubt about that, but ancient does not mean stupid. Okay, I'm going to go along with people with people like John Anthony West and Dr. Scott and or Scotch or however you pronounce his last name and all those other people. I personally that there have been great civilizations before our own that have been wiped out through catastrophes. Either it's Velikovsky's catastrophes or whatever, or biblical floods or who knows, but. Do I think that we've been influenced? Possibly, but I think that that influence has come from us, and we have forgotten who we are and where we came from. That's what I think.
Okay. Chad, what do you think?
Well, I actually think that we were basically bred as a slave race by the Anunnaki from the planet Nibiru.
Are you serious?
Thank you, Zachary Simpson. No, actually.
That's just what Rick was worried for a second there.
I was holding my breath.
I was thinking, my God, he's finally crossed over to the dark side.
I've not even been drinking, so, But, yeah, I mean, I read a lot of books, so I think it's possible, but we'll never know for sure. This is one of those great mysteries.
Okay. So, Teresa, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Karen.
As I say, I believe all genius is inspired, and what that source of inspiration is, who knows? But I believe that all acts of genius, and I think that everything is kind of genius. You know, any acts of creativity, they're inspired. It comes from someone.
Yep. Cool. Well, Teresa, JD, do you have any thoughts on this? On this one?
Yeah, I do, and I won't. Go on a big long rant, but I am on the same page here with Rick. One thing that gets me is it permeates the this one ideology that permeates alien astronaut theory is that of a primitive people. You hear that from all of them. These people were not primitive by any means as far as how we associate primitive, the ideology of primitive. These were extremely intelligent, industrial people, just like us. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were just as smart. They could do just as much. And in fact, they did more with less. And there's archaeological proof on how a lot of these things were built, the great structures. The one thing that strikes me, though, see, I can play both sides of the cards here, is why did this idea of pyramids spring up around the same time within different cultures all around the world, and these cultures had no contact with each other that we know of, but yet all of a sudden they started building pyramids, all of them. So, that's one big mystery right now in archaeology. Mm-hmm. Do I believe that they were influenced by an alien race? No, I don't. But there's something strange about that. Something,
so you don't think that people just traveled, you don't think that people just traveled more than we thought that they did, and maybe they were influenced by other cultures because they...
Yeah, that's a possibility. I think that it just hasn't been proven yet or shown, but I think that's a possibility. I also think that a lot of these dates are a little bit older than we believe, and that they're tending to knock those dates backwards year by year with more research. So, but I think there was probably more contact amongst civilizations back then than we've given them credit for. And,
We'll have to wait and see. Right. I mean, I think the perfect example for this is the wear and tear and weathering on the Sphinx. I mean, it's been noted and it's been studied and it's been documented that this was not caused by wind or sand, but this was actually caused by water. And there has not been, a lot of rain or a lot of water in Egypt, until about maybe 15,000 to 20,000 years ago. So it's possible that the Sphinx in and of itself proves this idea that mankind is far more ancient and was far more technologically advanced, and we didn't need any help from aliens.
Stonehenge.
Stonehenge, Teresa.
Stonehenge. Yeah, they said they had to trek those stones how many miles? The archaeologist could probably tell me more than I can.
It was about 100 miles.
It was pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah. But did aliens do that, or did, you know, did an ancient civilization work their asses off and do that?
You know, but if aliens were going to come here and they wanted to do something, why would they come and stack a bunch of stones together in a circle?
Well, you know, because it's cool.
Right.
Now,
you know, but that's with the Sphinx and the pyramids, you get stumped.
But now, what if it was that simple because it's cool?
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, that's a perfectly valid reason for doing things, in my humble opinion.
You know, when that tree fell in my yard, I had a whole lot of great big long tree branches that I had to move. Mm-hmm. I had a John Deere lawnmower and nylon rope and tree limbs. And I moved them all, and I didn't ask a man or an alien to do it for me. I had initiative, and I did it. Right. I had an idea, and I did it. So, I don't think the aliens built the pyramids. I think there was a whole lot of slave labor went into that.
I think they might have had some kind of technology that we don't have now that maybe had to do with sound.
Mm.
And they could actually make the stones lighter and make it easier to move.
And actually, research, Teresa, just showed, and this is just brief, it wasn't by slave labor that they were built. It was actually, they're finding out now that it was duty of the citizens that lived there. It was an honor for them to work, just like being conscripted into the military. They served a certain term to work on the pyramids, and then were done with it.
It was like Egyptian Job Corps.
So yeah. Charlton Heston didn't build the pyramids?
No.
Damn. Sorry.
No, I love that movie.
Hey, Karen, in your roundtable recently, you had hit on an item, I believe, where the Egyptian, I can't remember his title, but I don't know if he's a curator of some of the...
Zali Hawass?
I'm not sure, but didn't someone in a high up position there in the government... say something about there's something inside the pyramids that they discovered that seemed to lend credibility to extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yeah, now that
what
you
was
say
that?
That,
gosh,
I can't remember.
But
I don't remember exactly what it was, but yeah, it was a lightning question.
Yeah, so I
yeah, I don't remember because I write those and then they're out of my head.
Yeah, yeah,
gone.
Mm. Yeah, thanks.
Anyway, I just think it's interesting that people high up in governments think that way too. So. Seems to me there's something to it.
Could be. You know, I tend to agree. Ancient doesn't mean backwards, and you know, human ingenuity is pretty amazing with some of the stuff that we can do. And yeah, we do it now with technology. But I'll tell you, every summer I go and I walk through a snow shed that was built in 1910, back when they didn't have all the machines and everything that we did. And that thing is more solid than anything you see built with our technology now.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Wade can tell you that new building technology is not necessarily the best. He's been building houses for 40 years. So, you know, the newest technology is not always the best.
Right.
Good point. All right, well, switching gears, we're heading back to cryptozoology, and Chad had a point about cryptids and what they could possibly be or where they could possibly come from. Chad, take it away.
Well, I've heard theories, you know, it's all theories, about how, like, some of these, like Bigfoot, the Thunderbird, you know, around San Antonio, that basically these creatures come from another dimension. And that's why you don't see them, because they go back to these other dimensions. Also, there's areas of high strangeness, like the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, and various places like that, where you have all this weird stuff, and they, you know, there's cryptids involved, there's UFOs, there's poltergeist activity, you know, because I think a lot of it's connected anyways. But I just, you know, I don't know, you know, if they come from other dimensions or some of them, not all of them, maybe some of them.
Well, maybe that's why there's no bodies found. Maybe they do come from another dimension.
Well, because you have the Thunderbird, and they've found big birds, but they haven't found anything like what's been described, like the size of a Cessna.
Right.
That's a pretty big bird.
Right. Well, you know that that they've done the math, and they scientists now believe that the universe contains many folded dimensions outside of the three dimensions plus time that we perceive. Mm-hmm. So who knows? You know, it's as good of an explanation as anything, but I would go further, Chad, than just saying cryptids. I would say ghosts, maybe mm-hmm. UFOs. There could be all sorts of interdimensional stuff that we just don't have the ability to perceive in some normal way. And so we ascribe them to paranormal things instead, paranormal explanations instead.
Well, they defy explanation. So.
Yeah. And if I can just jump in there real quick, I mean, you know, when I think of in this country, you know, things like the Thunderbird and, you know, Sasquatch or whatever, I always think of, you know, like a Native American perspective. Like my grandmother, who was 100% Cherokee, she used to talk about the Great Bird bringing renewal to the earth, which, you know, of course, is the Thunderbird mm-hmm. in their mythology. So these legendary creatures are going back thousands of years, and I personally believe that you know, Native American forebears actually were seeing something real and that was of nature. I really don't ascribe to the belief or the idea that this is some kind of interdimensional being. I really do think that this is something of nature or was something of nature and is no longer among us.
So why would interdimensional not be of nature?
Well, no, what I mean is like something of the natural world. You know, something right. that's primarily in our world.
You mean of our natural perceptual world, because science has shown that we have folded dimensions that we can't perceive.
No, I have no doubt about that, but I do believe that, you know, that this is something that is of, you know, primarily our world, third rock from the sun, spinning, you know, around mm-hmm. in the backwaters of the Milky Way galaxy. I do believe that this is something that is completely of the natural world, or was.
Right. And I'd like to add to that with a lot of Native American accounts and things, you find Sasquatch-type creatures, and they have names for it in all different tribes mm-hmm. that exist within their frame of what's natural as far as the creatures within their natural world. Their mythologies and their real creatures are kept totally separate. Mm-hmm. And Bigfoot and Sasquatch and those types of things are always within the realm of the natural. It's something that's real to them, something they've seen, something they've experienced. And why they're not seen, this is just an idea to think about this, okay? Reading accounts of Native Americans and studying them and things like that throughout my career, I know that their warriors and things like that, even their hunters, they were extremely highly trained and attuned to the natural world around them, to the point where when they would come down paths, hunting paths and things like that, they would notice whether or not a bush or a limb or a branch on a certain tree or area was out of place, if it mm-hmm. had changed. They had that type of acute sense when it came to nature. How many of us can say that? That is almost an alien concept to us.
Yeah.
And if you're dealing with a creature that is of the woods, who lives in the woods, they are going to have that same type of sense. And don't think for a minute they couldn't hide from you if they didn't want to.
Teresa, you had something on this, I know.
Yeah, now my husband's a hunter, so he's all about watching the signs of nature when a tree branch has been bent. But if we accredit Bigfoot, UFOs, all the cryptids that can't be explained, are we not copping out on natural science? I'm going with JD here. Don't we just, are we pigeonholing stuff into interdimensional areas that we still could maybe attribute to something here on Earth?
Natural. Or interdimensionals could become part of our natural science. We're just not there yet.
No.
Because you guys are talking about dimensions as if it's not part of our natural world. It is.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah. I mean, that's possible. Yeah. But
it's possible. I just wonder if we don't, for the things that we can't explain, that we don't pigeonhole them as being in another dimension and visiting this dimension or this plane and that plane. It's just something I think about.
Yeah, see, I look at it a little differently. Let me explain dimensions, because I have a really easy way that I explain it to people. Say that you were two-dimensional, and you were a creature on a flat piece of paper, and that was how you lived, was in your two-dimensional height and width kind of way, all right? And then a three-dimensional creature came and tried to communicate with you. That three-dimensional creature is very natural. It's still in the same world, in the same universe. I'm sorry, my dog is barking, as you. But but even though it is, the two-dimensional you is not going to perceive three-dimensional whatever it is in anything that's natural. You're going to think, oh, my God, it's a ghost. It's a voice from the beyond. And really, it's something that is part of our natural world. The folded dimensions in our universe are part of our natural world. We just do not have the ability to perceive them. So I understand what you're saying. Well, can it be a natural explanation? Yes, but that's part of the reason that it maybe not is because we haven't integrated those folded dimensions into our natural explanations for the universe yet.
Okay. Cool. I thought a lot about today when I worked in the Forbes 500 company. We were big followers of Tony Robbins and all of the ways to get your goals achieved. And we had the SMART goals: specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. What we're looking at is neither measurable nor attainable. Well, there's no way right now to measure paranormal activity. I put it all on a business model. That's what I was never a scientist. So. But, you know, there's no way at this moment that we can measure any of these things. And so the goals of finding timely would be now, but we have no way to measure what we're looking for. And I would love to see that happen in my lifetime.
Yeah, I guess I don't know why we need to measure everything. I mean, I understand because everybody wants to know that something, but
yeah,
so
I want to quantify it.
I will say this: there are people in this conversation right now who believe in God or some form of God. All right.
Oh yeah.
God is a matter of faith. Completely is not measurable.
Exactly.
And people who believe in God are okay with that. So if it's okay to believe in God and not have to measure God and not have to quantify God, I don't think we have to quantify everything.
Well, you know, yeah, you're right. I don't have to quantify that ball rolling all over the floor at Waverly Hills. I saw it. I didn't get it on camera, but I saw it. I was there. I have backup. My husband saw it.
Then you quantified it. You recorded it. You have a video of it. You have, it's,
no,
you know.
No, I have my optical video of it. We didn't get anything on camera.
Oh.
I have Wade, that's the big wolf, that's my backup. Mm-hmm. And he walked across the floor and said, there's nothing in the floor that made it roll back. The floor's level, and this ball was rolling around all by itself. I'd still like to find out what did it.
But you know what you saw, don't you?
I do. Wade does. Unfortunately, I didn't have an infrared camera to film it. So.
But is it good enough for you that you know what you saw?
Heck yeah.
See, and that's it. And that's where that line is between how scientific, it depends on what you're doing. Now, somebody like JD, who is a scientist, it's very important, I think. JD, I'm not trying to put words into your mouth.
Okay.
I think it's important to you that you can measure these things,
hello?
Right? We have a lag.
Lag.
I can hear you guys.
A lag.
You're coming through.
All right.
Okay, so isn't it important to you that you measure things? Then that's kind of where your head is, JD?
Not always. It depends. I also have faith-based beliefs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's an open-ended argument when it comes to paranormal, which is what's being applied. Because even now, you have believers who go on faith, mm-hmm, because it can't be measured. And you have non-believers who are skeptical because it can't be measured. So, you know, you've got both edges. So what do you, you can't expect, the people in the paranormal will say, I experienced this. Why don't you believe? You have to take me for being credible because I experienced it. I know what I've seen. People who didn't see it say, I don't know you. I don't have to take you for credible. I didn't see it, and I personally don't believe in it. So the reason it has to be measured is because you've got people in the paranormal that want that to be accepted.
So you're talking about proof.
So,
Yeah.
And that's the whole idea of it. Now, if you're a believer and you're okay with that, fine.
Sure.
You know, and there's no problem with that.
And, you know, JD, you and I have had this conversation before.
Oh, yeah.
I know what I've experienced, and that's good enough for me because I don't need to prove anything to anybody.
Right.
And but I certainly appreciate what you're doing. And what do I always say about me doing scientific experimentation? I am the last person on Earth that should be, because I see something shiny and run off in the other direction. Yeah, that's
right. Bling.
Ooh, shiny! No, that's it for me. So I'm not the person who should be doing the scientific stuff. So for me to uphold my, you know, what I see and experience is good enough for me, I think is probably, I don't expect anybody to believe anything I say.
Well, for our last couple of topics, we're going to try and combine two in one here, and it's in the UFO category. One is a question about, JD put this one out there, is there any solid evidence for alien abduction? And along with that is Rick's comment about a structure found on Mars. So, Rick, do you want to start off with the structure?
Yeah, the structure is one of those things that really interests me because, you know, first off, I'm kind of wondering if this guy, I think his name is David Martinez or whatever, you know, sitting at his mom's basement, you know, checking out Google Mars and all that. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, the thing that always interests me about anything with Google Earth, now I can go on Google Earth and I can Google where I live and I could see my car sitting outside in the middle of December of 3 years ago. And I think that a lot of people don't understand this, and there have been so many flybys, so many
satellites. But that it's not live.
It's not live. Yeah. Whatever this is.
You can't see my house from Google Earth. I have too many trees.
Yeah, that too. But now with this structure here, is this something that recently showed up, or is this something that's almost 50 years old? So if anything, it's a possibility that, okay, yeah, maybe this was something that was on Mars that was built by whatever. But, you know, looking at it, looking at the pictures, looking at the video, I kind of wonder if maybe it was just like a naturally occurring structure with the, you know, like the sun glinting off of it. It's kind of like the face on Mars thing. More of a shadow than something built. I don't know. What does everybody think?
I think it was an artifact of some kind, a photographic artifact.
Yeah, okay. I think that too. I know I'm familiar with who he is and what you've said. I've looked at it, and it looks like an artifact to me.
Yeah.
Well, I think they, so too. If given the opportunity, I think they ought to explore it just to see if it's actually what it is.
You know, we've been dying to find life on Mars for decades and decades and decades, and it's not that inhabitable of a planet. So.
But pretty nasty. Like, you know what? Maybe it was 20 million years ago.
That's possible.
Yep.
That, right.
Could be.
I haven't seen the new stuff. I've just seen the face on Mars. I hear dogs.
Oh, sorry, you know what?
That's my Jack Russell.
Mine just came in here a minute ago. I had to mute because they actually came in and there were like three of them and they were in a ball rolling together, growling at each other, and they bashed into the door.
The cats have been really good tonight, so. But no, I haven't seen anything new, so I have nothing to contribute to.
Okay. All right, well, what about JD's question? You know what, I'm just going to chime in. I think that there is a case out there that, if you really look at it, it's very convincing, and that's the case.
I know who you mean. I think he's crazy.
Stan Romanek. Yeah, I've talked to Stan personally several times, and
I have too. Yeah,
And I think that his story is very, very compelling. And if you read his book and you read all the material that's out there, I think it's pretty convincing. So, Chad, what do you think?
Well, Stan Romanek wasn't the first one to ever write a book about being abducted. There was also Whitley Strieber.
And I'm glad you brought him up because he was the first person that really convinced
me. Travis Walton.
Yeah, Travis Walton from Fire in the Sky.
Right.
I think
Betty and Barney Hill.
Well, either something's abducting them, or it's just like some kind of condition of the human mind to where maybe you think you've been, but they've also had missing time in these instances too. So,
I have missing time all the time. I walk in the kitchen and I forget what I'm there for, and then I look at the clock and realize I've been standing there for 5 minutes not remembering what I'm there for. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, and oftentimes my wife will wake up in the morning and she's like, "Oh, I just found a spoon encrusted with peanut butter. Were you in the peanut butter?" And I'm like, "I don't know."
Are you a sleep eater?
You know, I might be. That's kind of why I have to, like, work out an extra little bit.
Oh, do you take Ambien or anything?
No, I don't.
Huh. Wow. I didn't know that about you.
Mm-hmm.
So, Teresa, do you have anything on this topic?
Stan Romanek didn't seem to be the most credible witness for me, but...
Why is that? I'm just curious why he wasn't credible to you.
The Larry King Show... there's something about the tone in his voice, and then I saw the videos that he made of the alien in his window, and it looked like a big cat to me. I have cats. I know cats. I know what cats look like when they want to come in the house.
Yeah.
So do you think there's any case out there that lends itself to be
evidence? I'll tell you what, we have a lag again. I just recorded on DVR The Fourth Kind, so when I watch it, I'll let you know.
Oh, no, not that.
The Fourth Kind is not,
I hate that movie.
But that's fictional, so.
It was kind of a joke. But,
oh, okay, okay. Just want to make sure.
I'm not really positive what I feel about alien abductions. I watch too much X-Files.
You know, I have a friend who believes that she was abducted by aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And what is her basis?
When she was a teen. She was in her room. She woke up. There were creatures standing at the end of her bed. They walked her to a picture window. They showed her their spaceship. They took her up in it. They showed her the Earth. It has all of the classic elements of alien abduction. Now, here's what I will say about my friend, who I care very much about. She's a very good person, so I'll start with that. And I believe that she believes that this is real. I also know that she had a really difficult and abusive childhood that extended into her teen years. And there are some elements of alien abduction that people feel very special and chosen, in spite of the fact that it's traumatic. One of the common elements is that all of these people feel that it was very special, and that they've been chosen for some reason and they're special. And a lot of these people have really tumultuous childhoods or teens. Like, one of the arguments against Betty and Barney Hill being abducted by aliens, for instance, is that they were an interracial couple and they were going through, and it was in the 60s when this was, you know, really not societally accepted. It wasn't common. It wasn't okay with people. And so
it didn't happen in Tennessee.
So there, if you look at a lot of the stories of alien abductees, they have some kind of trauma in their past. That being said, a lot of scientists have done studies and have, including some Harvard scientists, and have arrived at the conclusion that the most likely story is that these people were abducted by aliens. So,
okay.
That's interesting, right, because I've read a lot of stories or watched them on TV or what have you, and the people didn't have, you know, they were just normal, didn't care about UFOs, didn't have the trauma that you're talking about, and yet it happened to them, and it was the last thing that they ever wanted or expected. Mm-hmm. So I think you have both sides of the coin going on here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I have another theory concerning this, but first off, I just want to say about Stan Romanek, great hair. Okay, now
I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
here's my theory concerning it, and I came at this the other day. Theodore, the future world's greatest paranormal investigator, my son, he's 6.5 months old. So, you know, right now he's doing the teething bit. Okay, so of course, as everybody with kids know, whenever a child is teething, they run a fever. So you put you take a rectal thermometer and you take their temperature that way.
Oh.
So you got the anal probe. Now let me finish. Let me finish. Okay. Then you have to go to the doctor every few months to get checked up, and you're getting shots, the poking and the prodding, the bright lights being shined in your eyes. What these people are experiencing? Because let's face it, there was very rare that there was any kind of alien abductions prior to modern medical science. Okay, what if what people are experiencing is some kind of repressed memory or a throwback to when they were a baby or young children, and we were taking rectal thermometer checking, shots, pokes and prods, bright lights in their eyes to check for sight, or you know, stuff for hearing.
Went to get their tonsils out and they went under anesthesia.
Exactly.
Have you guys ever come out of anesthesia before and gone under anesthesia? It's a very disorienting.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just have one thing to add.
Sorry, guys.
Lag.
One thing to add to this. How do you account for the people who have claimed to be abducted and they have actually had implants surgically removed from below their skin? Things that
Dan Romanek has had.
That's one thing I can't explain.
Yeah, but you can get artifacts under your skin. You trip, you fall, you skin your knees.
That's what I'm thinking, because most of the stuff they pulled out was just everyday things, but they were weird things.
Yeah, but you know, who knows where you're gonna get kids get into all sorts of stuff. Who knows what's floating around under my skin? Probably none of us should ever have an MRI on the risk of, you know, something being ripped out.
That's true.
I actually just had to write an article about that, about MRI machines and the dangers of how they like can rip stuff out of people. Mm-hmm. Anywho, okay, we need to wrap, don't we, Cheryl?
We do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. That's it for this week. So thanks everybody for joining us and listening and discussing all of these cool topics. We had a ton more, but you know, we're long-winded, the bunch of us, so we didn't get to half of them. So
bags.
Yeah, how dare you. Next week, come back. We're going to have the president of Past is Present, Ellen Almendinger. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her last name correctly.
I believe you are.
Okay, yay.
Yes.
And
there's a race car driver named Almendinger.
Oh, well, I wonder if she's related.
Ellen lives in Yakima, Washington, so don't know.
Not sure where AJ comes from, but I'm sure he lives in North Carolina now, like all the other race car drivers.
And also, don't forget to check out paranormalunderground.net and check out the magazine for free online. You can join in on the forums, and you can also get the magazine in print at magcloud.com. Just search for Paranormal Underground if you're interested. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
All right, see you then. Thanks.
Thanks for asking.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the ZTalk Radio Network.